Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to God is Gray, the podcast. Although I, as a Christian, believe that God resides in absolute truth, in black and white, we as people are stuck here on planet Earth contending with the gray. In church, gray areas often cause dissension, anger, and even hate. But on this platform, I welcome open dialogue, variety of opinion, and differing belief systems. God is Gray is meant to teach, inform, and simply trade stories with kindness, love, and mutual respect. If you have a story or perspective to share, please reach me, Brenda Marie Davies, at godisgrayxo@gmail.com. To support the cause and be a part of our community, donate to patreon.com/godisgray. Now, on to the episode.
Hi, beautiful people.
Today, I am delighted to have Coach Yima. We became friends through the God is Gray community online, and she is a coach that really talks about people making peace with their faith and their sexuality. So that obviously includes LGBTQ issues. And I've been wanting to have a conversation like this for a long time. I know it's going to feel like I'm on trend right now, but you know, I've reached out to specifically Black sex educators in the past, because I've been like, I know that the Black girls' experience with purity culture is different than the white girls. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to get some clarity on those distinctions. Anyway, we're just going to let this conversation flow, and you're turned up today because...
It's Juneteenth, baby. We are celebrating. Oh. And it's exciting. It's so awesome. Yeah. I don't know why this was not a holiday before, but I'm so excited that I don't know how everyone or why everyone's waking up. I can go prophetic and spiritual about it, but whatever the reason is, it's beautiful. It's powerful that everyone's waking up to seeing the power of Black people and the story of Black people and how we've walked through life differently. And even before trying to explain to people that there are two Americas was very hard in the past. Yeah. There's a white America and there's a Black America, and people wouldn't accept that and couldn't understand it. And so even in the church, there's a white church and a Black church. And I'm sure you've said it before and people have heard it, that Sundays are the most segregated day in the United States, right? Because you have the Black churches and the white churches and Korean churches and all the different other churches that are here, but it's the most segregated day. But there are two Americas and there are two churches.
I think the first thing I'd like to address is that God is Gray is obviously about welcoming all kinds of people into every conversation. So
right.
I know there's been a lot of like fury and rage and confusion. And, you know, I myself, just being on my Instagram, have gotten a lot of like shame and some hits from white girls telling me how to behave in Black Lives Matter, how to even feel, which is something I resent. I feel like the church has been telling me how to feel forever, so I'm like, I don't need more people telling me how to feel. But like, you can school me, you can call me out on how I need to be behaving, and but like, I've only deferred to Black voices on how to behave in this moment. So all of that said, this is not about shame. You're an educator. Right. You're a professed educator. So it's like, hi, welcome everybody. Welcome. Yeah. We're not going to shame you here for not doing this perfectly. This is just going to be a really lovely, difficult, maybe education on what we're actually talking about. So how can you say there's two different Americas? Isn't slavery over? Isn't racism over? We had a Black president. How can you even say that? That's like one thing I hear.
Right. Well, it's the reality, right? Yeah. And even to make it real simple, going through the world as a woman versus going through the world as a man will tell you that there are two different realities that people have. So of course, going through the world as a white person versus being a Black person and then being a Black woman, I think it might have been Zora Neale Hurston that said, the Black woman is the mule of society. So you have the white man, you have the white woman, you have the Black man, and at the very bottom, you have the Black woman. And so going through the world as a Black person and then as a Black woman, it looks different, it feels different. And I learned this back in middle school, which I think is really interesting that people don't get this. But when a white person wakes up in the morning, they see themselves, they see their gender, they see their name, and then they go out into the world and they are just themselves. I am Brenda. I'm a woman. I'm just going to go out and experience the world. But when I wake up in the morning, I'm a Black person. And so the world engages with me first, not by my gender, which is why the purity movement is really interesting for me when it comes to the church. Mm-hmm. I'm not being engaged first as my gender. I'm being engaged first as a Black person or a person of African descent. So my experience is going to be totally different than how you experience the world. And I think I've been thinking through it, why white women are really able to tap into the gender inequalities in the world and in the church. They have a really clear voice on that because they don't have to worry about their color. So the thing that they are able to converse about and sit down and meditate on and get greater understanding on is their gender. But for me, the first thing that I have to navigate through and work through is my race, not because I choose to, is because the world relates to me first as this color of my skin, not as my gender, right? So that comes first.
That's so really interesting.
Don't have that. Yeah, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, I'm just curious. So what does that look like tangibly? Because I feel like a lot of people are trying to grasp that as a concept. But how does it feel? Like if you walk into a coffee shop versus I walk into a coffee shop, what kind of different experience are we having in how we're leading that moment?
Okay, so let's use the coffee shop. When I, as a Black person, walk into a coffee shop, the first thing I'm scanning is to see if there are any Black people in the room, to see if I'm welcome there first, right? Really? Is this a place that serves people that look like me, or people who look like me working behind the counter? And so once I gauge that, that's my filter. And so every other experience I have after that, so whether my wait time is longer because I'm a Black person, or the person behind the counter can't understand me or not hearing me correctly because I'm Black and they don't want to serve me, when you are as a white person walking there, you're not going to scan the room first to see if there are any other white people in there, right? You're just walking in and your first look is probably at the menu to see what's on the menu for you to order. The first thing you do as a Black person is to scan the room to see if there are anybody else that looks like you.
Scanning environments to make sure that you are safe and welcome. Like, so right. you're telling me that every room or space you walk into, the first thing you're doing is asking, am I welcome here? Am I safe here?
Right. Exactly.
Okay. Interesting. And sorry, your experience you're going to say?
So when I was younger, so I was dating a Caucasian person. I like to say European American because I don't like African American. Oh, like if I'm African American, a white person can't just be American. You should be a European American. If we're going to use it, let's use it for everybody.
Fine. So I was a
European American man.
Yeah.
And we went to the beach. He took me to this beach up in Jersey, and I scanned the entire beach. And there was, I think, one Black person. I felt extremely uncomfortable because I realized this is a place that Black people don't come to. They're not comfortable here. Am I going to be safe here? And so I scan it to see if there are other people like me. And then it is for safety. Am I going to be safe here with this European American, all these other European Americans around me? Are they going to be looking at me differently? Are there going to be eyes of judgment? You know, even as a traveler, right? People who travel around the world as a Black person, the first thing you do is search the country to see how friendly they are to Black people. White people never have that experience. They don't even think about it. So that when people start talking about privilege, the privilege that you have is that you don't have to go and look up a country to see if it's safe for people like you. And LGBTQ people can understand this too, because I'm sure they do the same thing. Is this friendly towards LGBTQ people? So
yeah. And women have that experience to an extent. Like I've always been jealous when I meet a guy friend that's like, I was backpacking around Italy, and I'm like, that must be nice. Even a boardroom with like a bunch of dudes. Mm-hmm. Although I do have to say, as a woman, I also understand the power of that. As a white woman, like I don't think I can relate to the exact level of like profound fear or rightful anxiety you might have to face being like, am I actually safe here? And I love going to the South. Like it's one of my favorite places, but then I did see racism. I saw people like beat their kids. I'm not saying this is like, I'm not trying to blanket everybody. I'm not one of those people that believes everyone in the South is an idiot or anything.
Yeah.
But that is a pure, like a perfect example of like, I wasn't scared there, but I noticed almost every single person serving me food was Black. Mm-hmm. And every single person in power that I ran into, especially in Charleston, South Carolina.
Right.
I don't know. I've noticed these things, but I've never had to engage with them emotionally.
Right.
Because they don't affect me.
Exactly. It is very scary. And talking even about taking road trips, like I drove up, I live in Colorado, so I drove up to North Dakota. And on my way back, I had to stop in this very small town to get gas. And my first thought is, are there any Black people here? Is this going to be safe for me if anything happens? Nobody knows where I am. And so those are thoughts, unfortunately, that we do have to think about. And sure enough, I stopped and got gas, and the gentleman was very weird. Everyone was looking at me very strange. Thank God I had my dog in the car. If anything happened, I felt like that would be my only protection. But it is a real anxiety that Black people do live with. As much as we don't want to maybe voice it or are tired of feeling like the victim because white America says, stop being a victim all the time. You're fine. We had a Black president. You're good. These things are not real anymore. It is very real. When I worked at the ministry for 7 years, for the first couple of years, I was the only woman my age and Black person on the board, on the executive, at the executive table. And I would come home and I would have nightmares about being the only person, the only girl, Black girl on the board, and all these white older men and the things that were said. It was just like, it wasn't comfortable. But for me, my own particular personal experience, my lived experience as an African woman. So I was born in Liberia and came to the States when I was 9. And so I don't have the conditioning that Black people in America, Black Americans have, where you're conditioned to know how to, you know, talk to the cops, how to behave in public. Cause I'm coming from Africa. We are the majority. Right. And so I came at that young age with that understanding and experienced my first racist moment when I went to a boarding school in Jersey, and I was walking at 13, walking to the grocery store, and the white lady got off the sidewalk and walked around me because she did not want to be on the sidewalk with me. That was my first time at the age of 13 in America experiencing racism. And then it became very real for me because I mean, as an African girl, my dad did not have those conversations with me. This is how you talk to police, or even my brother didn't have that conversation that most Black Americans do have to have with their children. And so my experience, which I love though, is very, very diverse, because I also went to I was the only Black person in a lot of schools that I was in. And even the education system is so different. Like in fourth grade in the white school, I was learning how to buy stocks, and we had to have stocks and all those different things. And I go to middle school, to a more urban school, and I asked the kids, like, how are you guys doing the stocks? And they're like, what stocks? We don't know what that is. They don't even know where to find it in the newspaper. And so when people tell me, and we're talking about defunding the police and all of that right now, and people don't understand that the education system is very different, right? And so Black Americans are being raised to be employees, and white Americans are being raised to be owners of companies. So
yeah,
there's so diverse. Yeah.
Yeah. There's something, I mean, so I had a podcast last week that I put out with my dad, or 2 weeks ago, because he taught in inner city Philly my whole life. And I have been having more conversations with him about that. I'm just like, you devoted 30 years of your life to these Black and Puerto Rican students, but that school wasn't, quote, good enough for us, or that wouldn't have been a place where we would be safe. And it wasn't safe. They had, you know, metal detectors before white boys were shooting up schools. It was like, it was just the way that it was in those neighborhoods. It was rough. And every night on the 5 o'clock news, they would feature stories from North Philly, which would be a lot of shootings, a lot of Black on Black crime. And it really created this sense of fear in white communities of like, oh, it's really scary over there. I mean, I don't know if it's okay to say this, but I just noticed some people in that community using like really huge words, and then white people making fun of them for misusing them. And I'm just like, now realizing that's because they have to like overcompensate to be taken seriously in the world. So they're like, but at the same time, they're not receiving the education. And it just like, even all of this being said is making me so uncomfortable. It's making me so sad. It's making me, you know, it's just like there's that one little instance of seeing someone in the news speaking in a way that sounds ignorant to you. Mm-hmm. There is so much in that one moment that has that led us to that moment. And then there's so much being received by anyone watching it that is, it's all dark. It's all wrong. It's all minimizing mm-hmm. people and not making them the human beings that they are.
Right. And even with, as you're talking about the overcompensating for having to be, needing to assimilate into white culture.
Yeah.
Right. And so for you to take me seriously, I need to act like you. I need to sound like what I think you sound like, because automatically you think because I'm not like you, I must be ignorant in some type of way. I must have less education. It's all a lot of different microaggressions. Like when white people will come to their black friend and say the word ask, and because they expect you to say ax. And so, oh, you're a black person, so you say ax, you don't say ask, mm-hmm. right? And so I had a friend recently ask me, like, well, say this word to me. And I said, we're not having this conversation. And I had to call them out on their racist behavior and let them know somebody very close to me, and they thought it was funny. But that is like when we talk about relearning and educating European Americans on how to treat people of African descent and how to be equal and live in an equal society, is those types of microaggressions that happen. Well, say this word, or do you know what this word means? Or I know a lot of black people used to say, what's the word? Conversating, which is not a word. It's converse, right? Yeah. So when I'm conversating with this person, oh, they're so dumb. They don't know what they're talking about. Like you're saying, like making fun of that. But this is from history, when black people had to become, you know, put the dress, the suit on, the tie, put your Sunday best on, so that white people wouldn't see you as a threat. And wouldn't see you as a criminal. And so now I have to assimilate to look like you. So you think, without my skin color, but you can even see from the clothes that I'm wearing that I'm a human being too. And yeah. So it comes from that very deep, dark history of America, the stain on America right now, that she's kind of, America's lifting up her skirt right now and seeing that she has a stain on it, on her, her slip, right? She's lifting up and saying, oh crap,
no, right? Yeah.
I have a stain underneath my dress, and I've been pretending that I'm so perfect and I'm so loving. Right? I'm so accepting of everybody, mm-hmm. but this is my issue. I have a problem. And now in the world, because of COVID-19, everybody has been able to stop and listen and see and pay attention. The world is saying, yeah, America has a problem and we need to fix it. Not that other countries don't have it, right? It's not just America, but America is the greatest country in the world, the country of freedom, the country of liberty. Everyone wants to come to America. But it's not equal for everybody. Everybody's not treated the same. And even coming in the country as an African person, in the beginning, I believe that African Americans were lazy, that they were victims. And for a very long time, I would have that conversation. Why are you guys acting like victims? Just, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. Everybody has the same opportunity. But because I went to white schools, right? That was how I was educated. That was my conditioning of how to look at people who look like me, but feeling myself separate because I was from Africa and I wasn't born here. And so I understand where European Americans are coming from when they say the things that black people are lazy and they can get education. We all have the same opportunity. And it wasn't until to my early 20s when I started realizing they don't have the same opportunity. No. At all. You're not going to the same school. You're not being educated the same. The only way you can get out the hood is to be a player at football or basketball, or be a good musician and be a rapper. That's the only like ways you can escape. And then within the community, within the black community, there is the shame there as well. So if you start talking like a white person, right, then you're shamed because you sound educated. And so now you sound like a white person. And you're trying to be like the white people. I got that so many times, right? Yeah. But it's a very real thing, because we don't, people of African descent don't know how to go into the white spaces and be themselves and still be respected, because they're not going to be respected. Right. When I was the head of the HR department, I couldn't go in there like, hey girl, how y'all doing? right? And they're like, what is she doing here? She doesn't belong here. But white people can show up as who they are and be who they are all the time, and it just be just fine and just great. But I have to like put on almost, not almost, I have to put on a mask and be a different person so that you can think I'm smart enough to handle the job that you've given me. And trust me, tons of pushback in the church, in the ministry, in the evangelical church, tons of pushback in my leadership role of people not trusting that I knew what I was doing or that I was smart enough to do my job because of my skin color.
How do you know it's your skin color, not any other variable, like being a woman?
Because there were other women in leadership that were white.
Okay.
I was trusted.
I'm like, excuse me, I'm purposely asking all the Karen questions.
The Karen questions, Karen. But you know what, Brenda? I wanted to even just like, I've been thinking about that. The fact that society, again, is the misogynistic nature of society that we have called white women Karens and demonized women again. And everybody feels very comfortable with that. Like, what's the name for the white man that's racist?
Kevin.
What is it? Kevin?
Kevin. They just named him.
I haven't heard of Kevin.
They just
named him. I was just thinking about this yesterday. I'm like, why are we so hateful towards women again that it has to be the white women as if they're the only ones who have problems and are racist or have prejudice or biases? Like, it's just, we just love to hate on women, and then being a black woman, then being a black queer woman, like, oh my goodness, like, how many strikes can you give me, Jesus? Like,
oh my gosh, wow, that's amazing. I mean, but we shouldn't get off on this too long, because I know, okay, you have so much brilliance to impart. But I mean, I'm furious at the Karens. I plan to make a Karen video next week, and I'm gonna do my classic God is Gray, mm-hmm, rage through my house and throw things, yeah, and then settle myself down and do a calm video, because yeah, I really do. I don't feel inauthentic when I do that. I just know that, yeah, I have to put my best foot forward. Mm-hmm. So it's like, but I'm gonna be honest and be like, I am furious to see these Karen accounts of men and women that are white.
Right.
Behaving in this way, it's like, does that make you even more afraid to travel, to do things? Like, there's a part of me that's like, okay, well, thank goodness you're on display, so at least we know who you are. But then another part of me is like, well, aren't they also just getting emboldened? Like, I feel like people are starting to behave in the world as they do on the internet, which can be very cruel and dehumanizing, right, everything. Like, is it worse now?
It's not worse. It's getting recorded. That's all. It's, okay, not worse.
Yeah.
It's always been a situation. I will say this. I don't like that we're highlighting women.
Yeah.
That are being racist. I don't like that.
That's,
I think,
fair.
If you're gonna, because they have an entire Instagram page right now called Karen's Gone Wild. I don't know if you've seen it.
I've seen it. I mean, I'm laughing now, but I was crying, yeah, watching some of them. It's like devastating, watching the person of color, Mexican, black, whatever, mm-hmm, receiving that hatred. Like, there's videos where other white women step in and do the right thing and tell the white person off. And it's like, great, mm-hmm, that's being an ally. Like, that's what I imagine and hope I would do in those situations. But right, then watching it bounce off of this like silent Mexican girl holding, mm-hmm, her cart, just minding her own dang business, getting groceries. Mm-hmm. I'm like, it made me cry. Cause I'm like, now she has to walk through the world with your hatred as like a stain on her.
Right.
Or spend all this time overcoming it. I mean, I agree. I don't want it to be focused on women, but at the same time, there's a lot of white women that I'm really mad at.
Yeah.
Especially women, like public figures. Also, Candace Owens. Oh, although, girl, I can't even really speak to that. Like,
we're not gonna talk about Candace, because I have no words for, yeah, Candace. I love her as a black woman. I listen to her to hear her opinions, because we can't be one-sided.
Yeah,
we have to. If you're gonna educate yourself, as painful as it can be, you have to educate yourself on both sides of the fence, right?
Yeah.
And so if we're asking European Americans, white people, to educate themselves on the struggles of being black in America, if we have black people who are speaking on the very, I don't know, I don't want to say Republican, because I don't think everybody who's Republican believes as she does, but we have to listen to all sides, right? And so if you're going to educate yourself, as painful as it can be, I think you're going to enjoy this. I shared the video that you did with the gentleman. He was talking, oh my gosh, he was a pastor. I forget what he was talking about. You were talking about race with him. And somebody has shared Candace's video with me on Facebook. And so I sent your video with that interview with the pastor to that person. I can't think of the name right now. I'm so upset.
Is it Lenny Duncan?
Yes.
Talking about race? Oh, okay. Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
So I sent your video and tagged, mm-hmm. like copied it into the comments. And they said, I couldn't listen to it. He sounded very angry.
Oh, gosh.
So I said, if you're asking me to listen to Candace, which I will listen to her if you're asking me to hear where you're coming from, the least you can do is move past your discomfort and listen to this person. So if we're not willing to feel assaulted or feel personally attacked by what someone's saying, to listen, move past your emotions on both sides of things and listen to what they're saying, because I think as Black Americans too, it's kind of assumed that we know how all white people feel. And we're just like, we don't want to hear it. We get it. You don't want to pay for your ancestors. Okay, fine. Great. Slavery's over. Okay, great. We had a Black president. Great. We're over it. We don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
But we have to hear it. Mm-hmm. We have to be able to listen and say, oh, so you're experiencing me listening to you right now, Brenda, talking about the pain and you crying over Karen's gone wild is interesting to me because I didn't have that response. And so I have to be human enough as Christians too, because we can't expect the world to behave the way that Christians are supposed to behave. We're supposed to be loving, right, and accepting and be able to sit down and freaking listen.
Yeah.
To what someone's saying. So if
Did I say anything ignorant in that? Because people have been telling me, like, I don't need to hear that you're crying. This isn't your turn to cry. But then at the same time, I'm like, but I was crying. I'm like just telling the truth.
Which I don't like. I don't like that. Maybe there'll be some Black people getting upset with me on your comments, but I don't like that.
Yeah.
If we're going to listen, we have to listen to everybody and make space for people to experience, for white people to experience what they're experiencing right now. It's okay for you to cry. So it's okay. I don't know that you're crying watching that. I may think that you're watching it thinking like, yeah, I agree with Karen. She should have said that. She was absolutely right. This is the law. He shouldn't be painting Black Lives Matter on his stool. Whatever the case is, I agree with her. But for you telling me that and me hearing you, that's adding to my experience to say, oh, like we really are all in this together against racists. It's not white people against Black people. There are white people who are able to have not empathy, because you don't know what we're going through, mm-mm. right? But have mm-hmm. compassion and understand as a human being what it would feel like for someone to just respond to you and interact with you based on your color alone. So
yeah.
I have to be willing to listen to you.
Yeah.
And if we can't do that, what are we? We're not going to get anywhere.
Love my Gen Zers. Yeah. Love you guys so much. But I've had a lot of, you know, 15 to 19 year olds slide into my DMs being like, you can't say this and you can't feel this. And I'm, you know,
right.
like I already said, I'm not going to like listen to how I should feel. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of anxiety building of like, oh, if we don't do Black Lives Matter perfectly as a white person, if we say we're upset, if we, you know, like, I think a lot of us are feeling a little paralyzed. And I'm like, that's the last thing I want any white person to feel. Like, no one should be just standing still like a deer in headlights. Whatever you're doing, you need to run for it, is my right. opinion. Are you in the same like frame of mind as me?
I am. Yeah. I agree with that, because you're not the first person I'm hearing that from. I've been listening. They did the share the mic on Instagram. And so I've been listening to white people, white women respond to what's the moment that we're in right now. And a lot of them are saying the same thing. They don't know what the right thing to do is. They don't want to mess up. They don't want to say the wrong thing, which is so destabilizing for someone. Because if you want to stand with somebody and you want to stand for a cause, and now you're feeling like you can't do it right. But one person, I forget, it may have been Jen Hatmaker. I may be wrong about this. But the white girl privilege of having to know the right thing to do and then being loved for the right thing that they're doing. So like, this is the right thing to do. I'm going to do it. Everyone's going to love me. Now, the right thing to do right now, everyone's not going to love you. People are going to have their comments. And so it feels really funny and really different and awkward and uncomfortable for white women right now, because you expect to have all of the applause, all of the hugs, love you, sister, love you, girl. Thank you. You did a great job. That's not going to come right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're standing with people who are so used to not hearing the applause, hearing the congratulations from anybody.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to be an ally, you have to be willing to let go of the privilege of the applause, of the thank yous, of the congratulations. And that's okay. If you're going to stand for it, fully stand for it. And don't let anybody, Black people included, tell you how to feel in this moment. I think that is a huge disservice that we're doing to all of us. And I'm coming from a standpoint of, I'm a Christian. I love Jesus. We are spirit beings inhabiting this world, moving through this world with our bodies, right? And so as a believer, I, of course, I'm going to put arms around you and say, come on in here. Let's talk about it. Share with me what's going on. How are you feeling about this? How, what do you want to understand? Have a conversation with me. And also too, I think Black people don't want white people who are just posting it on Instagram and then saying that's their activism, and you're not having any real conversations with any people of color that you know personally. Maybe you don't even know people of color. Well, then build those relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Don't post it on Instagram. It's cute. It's fun. Okay, you've done your duty. Now you've done the act of it. You're pretending, or you're acting, you're playing a role, but you have no real deep, genuine conversations or relationships with anybody that looks different from you. That's a problem. That's the problem. So we don't want the fake. Okay, stop pretending. Okay, if you're going to do it for real, do it for real in a way that no one will ever see. Because it's a thing when the white churches go to Africa and India and they're taking pictures with the kids with the blown up bellies. And it's like, I'm going to give this person a bowl of food to eat. Snap my picture for Instagram, right? It's fake. It's not real. We don't want to see it. Okay. You're pretending, you're playing a role. You don't really care about those people. We're done with it. So it kind of, I think it feels the same.
Yeah.
That is just like, oh, I'm going to stand Black Lives Matter. I'm going to change my profile picture. I'm going to put the black out on there. And then the next Black person I see in Walmart, I'm walking around them. I'm not having a conversation. I'm not even saying hi to you, but I'm posting on Instagram. Don't be fake about it. Like, Instagram, online, social media is not the real world, okay? We post highlights. Sometimes we post lowlights to seem real, okay? But at the end of the day, your real life is the people in your immediate circle that are around you. Are you having the hard conversations with your family, with the people that you know are racist? Okay. I had a situation at the ministry I was working for. My boss's mom came over, and she's like from Texas, very racist. And he had asked me not to come around because she was very racist. Like, the work would have been him having that conversation with her. Right.
Yeah.
So that's the work that needs to be done. And if you want to share that after you do the work, then share that. But don't flip it around. Don't do it opposite. Don't flip it around. You know, do the hard stuff first. And that's me as a coach too, though. Like, don't come talk to me.
Yeah.
If you're not showing me that you actually desire this, that you want it, by pursuing it first before having the conversation with me.
Yeah. I really appreciate you saying all of that, because, you know, suicide rates are up, depression is up, and everything, because we live so much of our lives online. And I know too, with Corona, it became obviously even more online. Now we're having Zoom dates with our friends.
Right.
So I personally do not like how online my life is, and I can't wait to transition and have people again.
Yeah.
But because of that, like, I think it's just really comforting to hear what you're saying. Not coddling, not, you know, you're still going in hard, but it's like, to worry less about how you're being perceived online, because I feel like people are putting a lot of stress on each other. They're saying, don't be performative, but perform. And you better put that square up. Like, my best friend called me and was like, you better put that black square up. And I was like, but I don't even know what it means. And there's a conflict about whether or not it's right or wrong. And she's like, just put it up. They're going to slaughter you. And I was like, oh my God. And I put up the black square. And of course, like 50 people were like, you should have never. I was just like, dude. And that's, my intuition was the exact same. Like, I just appreciate you saying, everybody listening, like, don't, fine, worry about your Instagram image, but really it's about how you're behaving in real life. And very soon it's not going to be solely online. You're going to get your real life back. And like, what are we doing in real life? Just try to like shut out all the voices and do what you know is right in this moment. Yeah.
And as believers, are we praying about it? Like, are you talking to God about what your role is and how you can present whatever he's putting in your heart? Because we don't want any fake pretending, playing church or playing a Christian. None of that is real. None of that is going to work, because at this moment in time, everyone's very raw. Mm-hmm. Everyone's very open, you know, and people have, there is a saying, the real recognizes real, right? So I can recognize if you're being real or not. Okay. If you post one post about Black Lives Matter, I'm scrolling down your Instagram feed and I'm seeing what you've posted before. If this is the first time you posted anything about this and not mentioned before, you're performing because you're part of that. You're trying to be part of the moment in this, at this time. And so I don't want to hear that, you know, but at the same time, though, it is your feed. So you post up whatever you want to post up. And you know, so it doesn't have to be either or, it's and, right? So hold space. And I think for your Black audience, for me to talk to them, just hold space for white people to go through whatever emotions that they're going through right now, whatever realizations, although it's hard for us to think that right now, that's you're just now realizing this. How old are you, right? As much as we don't understand that, we should be open to have the conversations. As a Black person, I'm not your educator. There's Google, there's YouTube. If you really want to know, you can go look it up, okay? But when you look it up and you want to come to someone who's having, that's their lived experience, and you want to talk to me as a friend to understand, to have more compassion, understanding, come to me and talk to me about it. Let's hold space for the conversations. We have to hold space for the conversation. I think that would be like my takeaway.
Yeah. And I, again, appreciate you saying that. Like, my boyfriend was talking about, primarily about white women sliding my DMs, getting mad. He was like, it's really like you're trying to reason with drunk people yelling at a bar. Like, because everything is so emotional right now. He's like, you can't talk to people at that level of anger, fear, hatred, animosity, like whatever, pain, and actually like expect. So in my prayer life, the message I kept getting was like, settle, still yourself, like wait for the messages to come. And for me, when I was in a more settled space, this is when Elijah McClain's story came to me. And then all of a sudden I was like, okay, this is something I can actively do. This is something I know I have power to do. And I really resented, actually, that people had told me to move faster and do things faster. But that's, again, on me. It's like, I love that you're saying, no matter what color you are, you have to take the grace and space to figure out what is actually the right thing to do and not let everyone's voice, like, prompt you to move quickly on something you don't know what you're doing.
Exactly.
And I like that you clarified, although I will still say, if you do reach out to your friend and ask an educated question and they're Black and you're whatever, and they don't want to talk to you, or even if they hang up on you, it's like, have have grace for that. Like, you know, don't be like, oh, you know, it's just like, okay, have grace for that. That's fine. And, and to your point though, too, that has not been my experience, because, you know, I did come from a as educated of place I could and asked very pointed questions, asked if they had time, space, energy, emotion to give to that kind of conversation before I called. You know, I was like, I have some BLM questions for you. I would love to bounce this off you. If you do not have the capacity for that, just tell me to F off and we're fine. You know, so it's been complicated, but it's like, all right, that's cool. Like, we can do this. Like, just settle your own spirit, right?
Right. Coach. Exactly. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I like that you're touching on, obviously, the Christian element too, because mm-hmm. I've felt like a lot of that has been lacking. And
so much.
Again, it's because of the emotion. And again, you know, I'm giving as much grace, infinitely amount of time to anyone that needs it in the Black community. But as a Christian, the way we're supposed to behave, mm-hmm. it becomes a whole new level. So it's like, okay, not only am I giving grace to that, but I'm completely right. forgiving any kind of reactionary things that anyone of any color is giving to me in this moment.
Right, right.
And also, how do you navigate a world where you're recognizing race? We know, you know, I used to think it was the polite thing to say, I don't see race,
yeah.
which, right. you know, is now I'm embarrassed to admit all of these yeah. things, but it's like, yeah, I used to think maybe when I was like 12 or something, like to say, hey, I don't even see race, don't worry about it, was mm-hmm. supposed to be comforting mm-hmm. without realizing, again, I was thinking about in Christianity, the quote, generational curse. Mm-hmm. I think we really take for granted that that's very poetic language for, to me, a family, a lineage, a line, a history of people, generation after generation, passing down the same pain, heartache, hardships, and mm-hmm. not being able to grow past them. And I think right. that white people are taking for granted that if Black people were brought here as slaves, and mm-hmm. it was not a long time ago, that
no,
we couldn't share a water fountain. Like,
right.
you're acting like, oh, we're just supposed to be over this because we had a Black president. And for mm-hmm. anyone who wants more insight into it, I watched beautiful Michelle Obama's Becoming documentary last night. That okay. was awesome because she talked about, yeah, it was like, my husband's a Black president, but this is still yeah. really bad.
Yeah.
And she said this before George Floyd, you know, happened.
Right.
So
right.
can you speak to the quote generational curse and like slavery, you know, segregation, how that is still affecting us today?
Well, a generational curses, if the way that I believe, right, we're in Jesus, all curses are gone, we're blessed. In Galatians, it talks about this. So it's generational learned behavior. It's not a curse. It's a learned behavior, right? So from the very beginning, if I'm learning, that the way that I interact with people who look different than me, or specifically people of African descent, is that they're lesser than me. If that is how my father feels, my grandfather feels, the people before that, it's coming down. It's coming down in conversation. It's coming down in the movies that you watch. It's coming down in the places that you spend your money. It's coming down to your social circles. And it happens in your church. So yeah. I think a lot of what we're noticing and realizing now, because I'm paying attention to the churches that are talking about the moment that we're in, and the churches who are very silent about the moment that we're in, and the churches who are on the other side of it talking about Blue Lives Matter, okay? So I'm paying attention, but I think that's the beauty. Just prophetically, just thinking about 2020 is when we're seeing things that we never saw before. It's perfect vision. Right. Yeah. And so everyone's being exposed right now.
Sorry, I felt this Oprah, like that tweet tweet moment. Yeah. Like 2020 vision. That's a really beautiful way to say. Sorry to interrupt you, but like everybody,
ahead,
yeah, think about that. That's freaking beautiful. Okay,
that's
go ahead.
Exactly,
sorry.
No, but that's the beauty of the moment that we're in right now. Everyone's trying to cancel 2020 and we're over it. First, there was the fires in Australia, then the war with, I think, Iran or Iraq, and then COVID and all these different things. But now we're in a moment where we are opening our eyes. We're being forced to open your eyes. You're being forced to confront this thing that's very uncomfortable for you. And the churches who are not saying anything or being performative about what they're saying, it's very clear where you stand. And it's very clear that Black people are saying, I'm not sending my tithes and offerings to you anymore because you don't care about me. Mm. We're in a moment that you should be standing up and being the example. If the church is supposed to be the light of the world and the salt of the earth, why are we not the loudest in the world right now speaking for equality? Because evangelical churches, Protestant, whoever they want to call themselves, have white supremacy in the pulpits, okay? And so I'm not going to have this conversation about this because this makes me very, very uncomfortable. But my white supremacy has placed me in a position in the church that is making me a lot of money, just to be real honest about it, right? So I'm not going to have this conversation. My congregation, the people who send me money from the South, wherever they are, right, are in agreement with, well, we're Christians first. We're not Black. So people that say, I don't see color in Christianity, people say, well, I'm Christian first. I understand what you're saying. But when I go into the world, when I'm in Walmart or at the grocery store, at the gas station.
You are not Christian first.
I'm not Christian first.
Yeah.
I'm a Black girl. Okay. Yeah. First. Mm-hmm. So even with all of that, I think that, and for me, I am hard on the church, but I have a right to be hard on the church because I'm a believer. I'm a Christian. I have higher standards.
You know how I feel.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should be the example. And I cannot, other than the T.D. Jakes interview that he did with Christine Kane and Dr. Caroline Leaf, and I forget the other names that were on there right now. It was a very great interview. But other than that, I don't see people in the church, the people who are on TBN, who are asking for your money every day, speaking up and saying where we should go from now. Like, where do we go after this? Because George Floyd, no one's mad because of George Floyd. We're mad because it's the straw that broke the camel's back.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So it's not people that think, well, what? He was Candace Owens. Well, he was a criminal. And he was, girl, sit down. Because we're not talking about that. We're saying we're over it. Even this morning, driving home from my friend's house, cops pulled over someone. And every Black person does this. You drive by and you check to see if they're a Black person. And you say a quick prayer to make sure they stay alive after that meeting. And I drove by and was a white woman. I said, oh, she's going to be all right. And it kept moving. Okay?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So it's learned behavior. And as a Black person, a person of African descent, taking it to the spiritual realm and before slavery, I cannot believe that my history started as slavery. If I participate in that dialogue with the devil, that white people are superior and they see me as inferior and start participating in that, I'm always going to be in the struggle. I'm always going to feel like a victim. I'm always going to feel like there's a mountain, there's a hill that I have to climb. I don't live like that. That is not my story. I didn't start as slavery, okay? You'll find this funny. Liberia, I'm part of the tribe. My tribe is the Bassa tribe. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I'm ashamed to say, our tribe was the tribe that sold other Black people to the white people for fish. No. And so as an African person, though, I know that my history, I'm not a slave. I didn't start as slavery. But even Liberia is the country created when they sent the free slaves back to Africa. And so they created a country, and that was Liberia. But if as a Black American, I think that my history started 400 years ago in America, I'm going to have a huge problem.
Yeah.
I didn't start here. You took me from somewhere. We were kings and we were royalty, and people, even for Christians, to go back into the Bible, Ethiopians were not light-skinned people with skin noses. They didn't look like Elizabeth Taylor.
No.
Like Lupita Nyong'o, okay? There were Black people enslaving the Israelites.
Also no white people in the Bible?
The Romans are there.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
If white people want to tell the whole truth, okay, if they really want to associate with somebody.
Oh. Okay,
if you really want to associate with somebody, associate with the Romans, because Jesus was not white, obviously, right? And so that's who you should be associating with, but that would be a hard story to tell up in church as a white supremacist.
That's a really profound thing for you to say, because when I said there's no white people in the Bible, I'm thinking about the celebrated figures.
Yeah, exactly.
Not realizing that yet again, the adversary was white. And that's like, exactly. That's not me being some like self-hating white person. Like,
no.
I think that, but it's just education. You're an educator. Education is the most empowering tool that we have. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the police have been trained to brutalize people, to be afraid of people. That is also an education. Like, we've gotten these different educations. I was educated to believe that Columbus discovered America, and him and the yeah. Native Americans sat down and had a really cute dinner.
Yeah.
Like,
yay, Thanksgiving.
And I'm trying to call that out right now. I'm like, it's not my fault.
Right.
That at 8 years old, you lied to me because someone mm-hmm. lied to you and someone lied to that person and said exactly. that they had a nice sit down dinner.
Right.
But it is my responsibility now to be like, you know, I'm trying to go back to the mouth of babes, like remembering mm-hmm. how children see things, because I have this very distinct memory. It's one of my earliest memories of the most traumatic thing I saw on television when I was little. Mm-hmm. And me and my mom were sitting down. I don't remember which movie it was, but it was after slavery, you know, when things were still really, really heated in the South, men were getting mm-hmm. hung, black men. And so in this movie, this black father got gasoline poured on him and got set on fire. And I think I was like, I mean, it was way too young to see an image like that. It was like 5 or 6. And I like ran out of the room wailing. I felt like my entire body broke in half and I was devastated. I do think it's okay, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's okay to understand that we are not inherently evil. We don't inherently believe these terrible things about exactly. each other. You can harken back to a moment where you, quote, didn't see color, that you were just reacting like a child and moving through the world mm-hmm. without imposed ideas about race on you. Mm-hmm. But after you give yourself the grace to be like, okay, I know I'm a better person, then you have to mm-hmm. trace your history and be like, okay, so after I wept in my room for that father,
right.
I put on a pilgrim costume and did a Columbus play. Yeah. And then I went to a white church with all white people, and I went on a mission trip to Ecuador and pat myself mm-hmm. on the back and thought I did something good. Like, you mm-hmm. have to educate yourself and be like, okay, great. You have a good heart. That is a great start. Thank God. Right. But what has happened to you since? Have I asked black girls to touch their hair? Yes. Like, you know, like, just look at your shit, right. part of my yeah. friend, and be like, yes, I have a good heart. Great. Great jumping yeah. off point. Now, what right. do I have to undo, and what do I have to relearn about what's actually happening in the world?
Right.
How I've participated. Ask mm-hmm. for forgiveness of whoever I need to ask forgiveness of. Mm-hmm. And then move from that place. And I love the quotes people keep saying. I think Lenny Duncan said, I'm going to like misquote, but he said, you know, getting out of white supremacy is a lifelong journey.
Right.
We've already been on this hundreds of year journey, and we have exactly. made progress. Like, it is important to know that you and I can sit at a coffee shop together and
right.
in Los Angeles, and no one's yeah. going to think twice about it. But right. we do have to still sit here and be like, could we do that anywhere, in any country, in any situation?
Right.
If the answer is no, then we still have work to do.
Exactly. And I think what we all have to understand is that we all have areas in our life of willful ignorance. So yeah. even challenging black people to say, how well do you know the struggle of queer people in America?
Mm.
Right? Mm-hmm. So we can get really mad at white people not understanding and not knowing the struggle and not taking the time to look it up and learn and educate themselves so that they can be more loving and caring and accepting all of that. But what have we done for queer people, right? And so there's this battle right now with the LGBTQ+ community and the Black movement. What was it that they just recently passed that said that you can't fire someone for being gay? And so they posted it on this popular Instagram black blog, and in the comments, because I love reading the comments, so I want to know where people are coming from.
Oh gosh.
They're saying, we don't want to talk about this right now. The LGBTQ people are always trying to take over Black Lives Matter. We need to focus on Black lives, not LGBTQ+ people. So every human, right, we can sit on our throne and say, you need to learn about my struggle and love me and care for me. But what are you doing for the next person that's different from you?
Mm.
And that's just the Christian perspective, right? How are you being a good Samaritan to somebody? Whoever it may be, no matter what your color, no matter what your race, your ethnicity, your background, there is somebody who's struggling in life different than you. And we should be interested and have a desire to learn about it and to help them if we can link arms with them to help them in their own struggle too. So it's not about the pointing of the fingers. Yes, I fully agree. White people have a lot of work to do. Okay. Yeah. Like, I love Toni Morrison's quote. I don't know if you are familiar with it, when she said, if you have to be, if you're only tall, if somebody else is on their knees, mm-hmm. then you have a very serious problem. And I believe white people have a very serious problem, and they need to figure out what they are going to do about it and leave me out of it. Okay. Amen. I fully agree with that comment. Okay. Yeah. I love that quote from her. So white people do have a lot of work to do, because they have been conditioned for a very long time to feel and behave as the majority. Even the term of white, right? White is pure. White is light. White is God. God has dominion. So white people have dominion. So even the language, that's why I'm trying to get myself out of saying white and black, because when you think about black, you think about the devil, you think about evil, darkness, scare, like fear, and all kinds of like darkness is blackness. And so black people are criminals. Like, you're very intentional in the language that you're using. Even the people who are pro-black and Black Lives Matter, even for black people themselves, our language is very important. If you're saying, stop killing me, I'm still the victim. It's not still about you. Stop being a murderer. Forget about stop killing me. Stop being a murderer. Yeah. Get off my neck. I'm still the person underneath your knee, right? And we have to be careful. I can't breathe. I can absolutely breathe. I am fine, okay? Nothing's wrong with me. You need to figure out what's wrong with you, because racism, prejudice is a neurosis. It's a mental disorder. You have a problem that you can look at another human being because of the color of their skin tone, and think somehow that you're superior to them. You have a problem and you need to figure that out, okay? I've been saying, because I really want this to happen, they need to put this in the DSM, the book where they have all the mental disorders. Put it in there.
Is it so, not? Because it should not, be.
Because if being a homosexual was, and you skipped racism, that's a problem.
Oh, so
put racism in there, okay? And when someone starts exhibiting signs, lock their behinds up and fix it before they go out and kill people.
Truly.
So if that's part of your, it should be part of the, whatever they do with the police, they're not getting enough training already, so that's even a bigger problem. But when you're evaluating them, you should have a list of questions that evaluates if they have symptoms and signs of racism, and it should exclude them from getting that job. Mm. We have to make it a problem and not make it like, oh, your heart is just bad. You have a bad heart. No, you have a bad mind. There's something wrong with you. Seriously wrong with you. We have to change the conversation. I'm not going to participate in a conversation that makes me a victim. I'm not going to do it, right? So if someone's a racist, that has nothing to do with me. I feel bad for you. Like Toni Morrison said, that you only feel tall when someone else is on their knees. You have a problem. And she said, you have to go watch the clip. I'll send it to you.
She
said, what do you have when they take your race away? Because race is a social construct. And she's like, you're all strung out on yourself. What do you have? Are you a good person? Do you like yourself when that's taken away? If I'm not a white person in America, take that away from you. You're just Bob, or you're just Karen walking down the street. You don't have a social construct of being superior or being the dominant one in society. Who are you after that? That's the conversation we need to start having with people. I'm not participating in the I can't breathe and stop killing us and get off. I'm not doing it, because you're not on my neck. You're not killing me. You have a problem and you need to fix it. You know what I mean?
No, I love that. I really do love that. And it absolutely needs to be in the DSM. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do I know? But it sounds more accurate. It's not a heart problem. And I think that's people's resistance to understanding, you know, like, we're so triggered. And I hate to say that Christians are so triggered by the word white supremacy, or even by like hearing that Columbus was like evil, which he was like a rapist, he pillaged, you know, like He was a terrible person.
He was.
So if that triggers you and makes me anti-American, like, just back up. Nobody is saying your heart is evil. Right. I mean, our Christianity says our heart is evil, you know, when it's misinterpreted. Desperately anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't even believe that, you know? So right. Like, I don't believe you're evil. I know what we felt when we were babies, when we were little kids.
Exactly.
But again, until we see these changes done completely, right. We're not done.
No. And we have to, it's in all sectors of society. When people say systemic or systematic racism, it's in every facet of society. So whatever your role is, me as a sex educator, you as the same, we play our role in sex education to make sure that we're representing all voices and all lives in everything that we do. Whatever sector of society that you're in, it's there. So show up for those areas. If you are a pastor in the church, again, going back to the church, if you're a pastor in the church, show up and do the work, yeah. Right? If the church hated racism as much as they hate homosexuality, we have racism in this world right now.
That's a striking thing to say. That's and it's depressing. Yeah, it's a fact.
But just listen to the language that we use when it comes, if we were to just flip it, leave the homosexual people, leave us alone and focus on racism, okay? If you were to call it an abomination, how would that change your conversation? Mm. If you told people that racism was an abomination, that it was a sin against God, mm-hmm. would go to hell for it? That there's something fundamentally, like they tell homosexual people, LGBTQ people, that there's something fundamentally wrong with you for being a racist. How much, I just even saying that frees me up. Like, it's just like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Why aren't we having that conversation? And that's the problem.
Amen.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not that hard. People are on my Facebook all the time because I'm very vocal on my personal page. And they're always saying these things. I'm set. And I always tell them, just switch the word homosexual racism with a racist. And then you'll understand how you should be viewing this. Because you're very confused. And you're defending something that you really should not be defending. It's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong with it. And it's okay for you to say that. Leave other people who are in consensual relationships alone. Okay, and focus on the people who actually have hate in their minds and their hearts, and there's something wrong with them. Fix that situation. And then we can move on from there. Because unfortunately, the reason why we have white supremacy in the world right now is because of the Christian evangelist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just to be honest.
I know.
It's a church problem.
Yeah, anyone that wants an education on it, easy read. I'm always propping up Jamie Lee Finch, You Are Your mm-hmm. Own, because she talks about how, you know, the Baptist church was created because
right.
the white evangelicals did not want to desegregate their church.
Right.
So our roots, we have root rot. And until we're willing to pull it all up, and that includes yes. pulling up the embarrassing, terrible mm-hmm. things you've said out of your own ignorance. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's like, okay, so you can move forward, you can forgive yourself for it, but you better behave differently and you better
right.
be willing to uproot it. Otherwise,
exactly.
what are we going to do? I don't want my child to live in this world.
No.
Yeah.
And you don't have to do it alone. You have the Holy Spirit if you're a believer. You're still a Christian, right? We're talking mm-hmm. to Christians. Mm-hmm. You have the Holy Spirit. He can highlight that for you. You really don't need to reach out to anybody and ask them. If you're embarrassed, talk to the Lord.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah.
He'll help you, and he'll check you when you're saying something that is inappropriate. Like, he checks all of us, right? That's mm-hmm. not loving. That's not kind. And then you fix it. So it doesn't have, I think the problem is people think they have to do this entire overhaul of their entire lives and now be loving of everybody. Like, it's so hard to love everybody. Like, chill out, okay? Talk to the Lord. Ask him, highlight for me, areas of my conditioning that have been affected by racism? Where have I missed it? Where was I taught wrong? Because we all have it. No one's immune from being having the wrong education, right? So help me understand. And then he'll help you understand. This beautiful, I always think when you're talking about little kids, I was sitting in church. My pastor's daughter at the time was sitting next to me. She must have been like 4 or 5. She asked me if she could lick my skin. She wanted to know if I tasted like chocolate. Okay. And I asked her, like, can I lick you? Like, do you taste like vanilla? Like, it was a cute conversation. But that is the heart of a child. And the Lord says, you can't enter the kingdom of God if you don't return to be like children. So that's the goal, to see people and wonder if their skin tastes like chocolate. Not to say that something's wrong with them, they're uneducated, they're a criminal. No, go back to the childlike faith. Have the eyes of a child in the world, and children do see color. If she's asking me if I taste like chocolate, it's not because she doesn't see color, right?
Yeah.
She sees color, and she wants to know if I taste like chocolate, because the only thing she's seen that looked like me is chocolate ice cream, okay? Right? So that's the goal, to have that beautiful heart of celebration of other people without the construct that you've been taught. Simple. And it goes for Black people too. Every white person I see, I don't need to look at them as someone who's going to potentially hurt me. That may not be true. I was walking my dog the other day. My dog pooped the first time. I picked it up. I had a bag. We're walking again. She poops the second time. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't have a bag. And I turn around, I'm like, this white lady's like strolling with her dog. And I'm like, she's going to think I'm this dirty Black girl just letting her dog poop all over the place. And I'm just like, she's walking towards me. I just put my hand down because, like, I don't want to have this conversation. I don't want to be hype on nobody today. I don't want to be bothered. So I just put my head down. And the white lady says, oh, what kind of dog is that? Because I have the same dog. All of my conditioning to see white people as the enemy, them as someone who's going to attack me, completely wrong in that situation. So we all have it, mm-hmm. right? And so mm-hmm. we all have areas where we have to re-educate ourselves. And as Black people, we've unconsciously participated in the narrative. And so we do have the internalized prejudice and racism, and we have the filters on our own selves. And it doesn't go away if you don't have the conversation with God and let the Lord begin to tear apart those parts of your identity and how you show up in the world as a Black person. Take all of that away and show us your beautiful chocolate taste and self, you know? Just show up powerfully. Black joy is powerful. Black joy is important.
Oh,
I'm not
showing
up as a Black person thinking white people aren't going to like me because I'm a Black person. I'm showing up as a Black person from a Black person. That's just it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts before we part ways?
No, I'll just clarify the work that I do. I do love, I am an activist at heart. So someone said that being a sex educator is someone at the core who loves social justice. So I think at the heart, we love social justice as sex educators. And that for me, for someone who coaches LGBTQ people who identify as Christians, I love that language, identify as Christians, okay, to make peace with their faith and their sexuality, at the core of it, it's justice. No child of God should ever feel like they're a sinner destined for hell, for who they were created to be, you know? And so that goes for a Black person, for a white person, for a queer person, LGBTQ+ person, a differently abled person. No child of God should ever feel that there's something wrong with them because of how they were created. You know what I mean? So I hope that's the message that people take away from this conversation, that you have on the God is Gray channel, you have a safe space to not be perfect, to not have it all together, to not be a white person who does Black Lives Matter perfectly. That is not the goal. All the movement is asking is that you check yourself, look in the mirror, and figure out where you've maybe have leaned over to the other side and done some questionable things, okay? And fix it with you and Jesus. And then go out into the world and just love. I don't know why it's so hard. Just love people. Why is that so difficult?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Just love people. If you meet me and I meet you, oh, you're a Black girl. Man, you're beautiful. You're a white girl. You're beautiful. What's your name? What do you do? What's your passion? That's my favorite question to ask people. What's your passion? What are you passionate about? That's how I get to know you.
One thing that we're missing of saying, which obviously you agree with, would be loving yourself, really accepting yourself as a child of God. Mm-hmm. Because until you can do that, then you need other people to be on their knees to make you feel okay. Like, exactly. Let's just even say, you know, you're a girl that doesn't feel very beautiful. You don't want to walk into a party full of supermodels. You want everyone to be on their knees. You want everyone to not look as good as you because you don't love yourself the way that you need to. So that to me is another thing. If you are bringing your guns out and trying to intimidate Black people and Black Lives Matter, you're trying to get them back on their knees because you don't feel good about yourself. You're not confident that you can make it in this world unless you have white supremacy having your back. And that is not, like you said, anyone else's problem except your own. Love yourself, get a grip on who you are, who God made you to be, and then you will realize no one needs to be on their knees for you to get all the blessings that God has ordained for you.
Right.
Yeah.
Celebrate all of who you are as you are. And if it's hard for you to do, again, get in the face of Jesus. I know that sounds really Christianese, but it's the truth. And let the Lord highlight for you all of the beautiful things like he did for me, all the beautiful things that he made you to be. And then you celebrate from that point. If I'm celebrating me, it's going to be very easy for me to celebrate you because I know I'm fabulous. I'm not competing with you.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yep. So I can celebrate you and pump you up. I don't need your validation.
I don't need yours either.
Right. Come on, girl. Okay. And celebrate all of it. Brenda, you a model already, girl. Stop. Okay. You're going to be like, Brenda talking. She already a model. She talking a whole bunch of mess right now. It's the truth, though. You just have to love yourself. And if you want to put some makeup on, make yourself, girl, go ahead. Love all of it. I used to coach women in their sexuality specifically. I would tell them to get naked in the mirror, which was something very hard for women to do, to get naked in the mirror and just stand there at least 10 minutes and just love yourself. Like all of it, stretch marks, bends, bulges, whatever it is, it's fabulous. Love it. And you walk in, the most sexiest thing anybody can wear is your confidence. Mm-hmm. You walk into the world confident, knowing who you are. That's why I could sit, even though I was coming home with nightmares, why I could sit at that executive table with those men, because I knew I was fabulous, child. I'm like, yes, I got the brains and I got the looks. What else you want? I know you're jealous. You know what I mean? Like, I'm showing up as all of me, not because of something I did by myself. As a believer, we lean on Jesus to help us in this world to show up powerfully as he made us to be. That's it.
All right, where can everybody find you?
They can find me on yema.com. My name is unique enough that if you type it in, you'll find it, but it's Y-E-A-M-A-H. And then I'm on all social media at Coach Yema.
Amazing. All right, we love you all. God bless.
Bye.